What's up, Noel Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with another episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Michael, we got a couple of little things to clean up today. We got some basketball stuff to talk to. Kind of things are falling apart over there at the Tucker Center. So we're going to touch up on that. Baseball has another series, ACC, this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about last year versus this year and just some of the progress that they've made. But of course, we got to find some football talk. And so we got a couple of little updates from some recent lawsuit action in North Carolina, as well as a couple of little things from spring. But we have another episode coming up that you guys are going to be really excited about, where we're going to go over a lot of spring with a former 2013 national champion. And so we'll be breaking that news coming up probably next week on who it's going to be. And so you guys stay tuned. So we're going to save some of the spring stuff for that one. But I did come up with a little bit of a fun game that we're going to get into about next season. And it'll be the spring edition. We'll revisit this later on once we see how things shake out. But with that being said, Michael, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining me.
Hey. Thanks for having me, Jesse. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that episode. I think the fans, I think you guys listening on podcasts or watching on YouTube, man, you're going to love our guests. Exciting opportunity. Jesse, thanks for getting that. But looking forward to this game today. Now, hopefully I got my game right. Face on.
So let's get into this lawsuit update first. Obviously, there was a little bit of action that happened in North Carolina that's worth talking about. The motion to dismiss and the motion to stay both got denied in the North Carolina case. However, Florida State did pick up a win in North Carolina. They ruled that Florida State does not owe the ACC a fiduciary duty, basically like the ACC is in business with us. We're not necessarily in business with you.
Correct.
You know, you owe us that duty. We don't owe it to you. And it got dismissed with prejudice, which means they cannot bring that back up. Yeah. Now, again, for the millionth time, we're not lawyers. I can't elaborate on what a lot of this stuff means. You know, Florida State, their legal team did kind of throw some haymakers in the Leon County case in a recent thing talking about the way this conference is run. But that's a couple of the latest updates in the North Carolina case. Not really a whole lot. It just means that the North Carolina case is going to proceed.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty much, I don't know if you have anything further on that.
Yeah, no, I just think that, you know, it's a bummer that they weren't able to get that case tossed out. You know, we all know the ACC basically filed the lawsuit before FSU even had the chance to vote on if they would file a lawsuit, and it was frivolous and all those things. But you know, hey, when you're in your home court, you know, you get home court advantage, and so they end up winning that case. That doesn't mean, now again, we're not lawyers, but from what we've read and understood, doesn't mean the case is over. Doesn't mean Florida State is now on the losing end or is the underdog on all of this. It just means that now they're going to be basically fighting a battle on two fronts here in Tallahassee in Florida and in North Carolina, because the Florida case has to continue because of state laws and stuff.
Right.
But the North Carolina case will also continue as well too. But they did get that small win, like you mentioned, Jesse, that they do not owe a fiduciary duty to the ACC. So that actually does help them in the long run, even though that these two dismissals kind of hurt in the short term.
Yeah. Now, I have seen some people say that maybe the North Carolina case is a good thing to proceed if North Carolina like jumps into this lawsuit.
Correct.
And stuff like that. Maybe again, I'm not a lawyer. I can't really elaborate on how that helps or hurts. There's, you know, Rohan Law, shout out to him.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot of really good updates on X or Twitter. Make sure you go follow him for our legal advice. You know, he boils it down for us, which we're grateful for. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where it's at right now. Just kind of a couple little movements, but not much. Again, this is going to drag out for a long time. And like you said, it doesn't mean Florida State lost. It doesn't mean that they still don't get to try their Florida case. And, you know, at the end of the day, man, like you're doing this. You were going into this knowing that you were exploring the option to get out to another conference. Like if you, let's just say worst case scenario, you lose. I mean, you were stuck in the ACC anyway. So like now they just know when that door unlocks, you're out of here.
Yeah, for sure. And you're out of there and, you know, God forbid they lose. Please don't lose. Please don't lose. But if they did, I mean, listen, we already have another ace in our sleeve, because while they're trying this case, we're also waiting on whether or not ESPN is going to renew this deal. And all indications, and when I say all indications, I mean based on what I've seen on Twitter, it just seems like right now the ESPN would be unwise to renew that deal. That's so much money that they could otherwise be investing in the SEC with them already bleeding cash. So, you know, there are a lot of things at least from our vantage point, looks like it's working in Florida State's long-term favor. In the short term, doesn't look at as much, but in the long term, it definitely looks like potentially there are things setting up for Florida State to be out of this conference. Right.
And even if things were to go bad, but you still are able to get out in 2027, that's I think that's still a decent win
still
because
better.
You're able to, you'll be behind, but you know, it won't be as bad as 2036. No. That's a huge difference.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we're just going to kind of keep watching things as they go and see where Florida State ends up. But I think with what's happening, the development, the cases are going to continue to go.
Yeah.
But I think you're working towards that settlement phase. I still think that's right. Where it's going to end up. I'm not sure that they're going to get out of this scot-free or anything like that. You're probably still going to have to drop some cash, you know. But I think as long as you get them to the settlement table, then that's it. Now, with that being said, I do want to touch on one thing real quick. The last episode we did on Florida State going to the Big Ten or the SEC, that was a pretty popular episode.
It did
pretty good. And it sparked a lot of comments. You know, I think we're at like 70, 80, 90, almost 100 comments on the YouTube video. So there's a lot of points in there. I understand what a lot of people are saying. And I just kind of want to clean up a couple things from that last episode. I think the overarching theme in the comments, kind of on a contrast to what we were saying, and keep in mind, we were saying that we like the Big Ten for the research money, for the AAU, if Florida State were to get that accreditation. We like it for all the academic aspects. We're in lockstep with you on that. But I think people also have to understand that this is a sports podcast. And so we have to talk a little bit about the sports aspect. You know, there's a lot of people who love the Florida State University, the academics and all that stuff, and could probably care less about sports.
Right.
There's a lot of fans, some that may listen to this, that just really want to tune in and watch the Seminoles play somebody on Saturday. They want to go to work and talk smack to their friend that's, you know, probably lives in Florida and is probably an SEC fan.
That's right.
So
that's
there's people that are sports only aspects. That's so while we do understand for the greater good, yes, the research money and all that stuff is wonderful, but we also have to approach it from a sports aspect. And, you know, again, that the SEC takes the cake when you're talking about a sports aspect. So there is that. I just wanted to touch on that. We understand, we're with you, and we understand both arguments. One is better for academics in the long-term university outlook as a whole, and one is better from a sports perspective. But the other thing I wanted to touch on too is, I get it, guys. We still don't like the SEC. I'm with you on that. We still don't like ESPN. That narrative did not go away in the comments.
It did not, and it
probably never will. I just think what's interesting with the SEC, and this is the only thing I wanted to touch up on, and then I'll kick it back to you for anything you wanted to clean up with that, was, look, I'm against the SEC too. I get it. They're the Death Star, whatever you want to talk about. They're the evil empire, whatever you want to call it. It was not the SEC that kicked Florida State out of the playoffs.
No.
It was the committee and ESPN and their dealings. Alabama was under no circumstance supposed to or expected to go, well, you know, it's not fair what they did to FSU. Here, you have our spot.
Right.
That's not their fault. We wouldn't have done the same to them. So, I think you can't hate the you can't hate the SEC for the snub. And I think if you look at it from an SEC perspective, if you get Florida State into that conference, you're still going to get that treatment. You know, if it comes down to Florida State versus, say, I don't know, NC State has a good year or something like that, and they remain in the ACC, and you're vying for that last playoff spot, if you're in the SEC, Florida State's going to get the lean. So you would get that preferential treatment as well if you did go to the SEC. So really, that's just a couple things I wanted to touch up on from the last episode. If you happen to watch it, if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to go back and watch it. We just have a fun discussion on where we think Florida State should go. We did a fan poll. Over 2,000 responses were recorded in that one. So just a couple things I wanted to touch up on after that last one.
Yeah, listen, first of all, that episode was so much fun to record and do. And, man, we're so appreciative of all of you guys in the comments.
Right.
And, man, I love this. This is what I love about our fan base. We're so passionate.
Yeah.
And you pick a side, and they, if it's not their side, they will get on you.
Oh, they're going to come for you.
They're coming for you, man. And they chose violence every time.
Yeah.
But here's what I'll say to this. Okay, first of all, the Big Ten. Listen. Again, we have nothing against the Big Ten. We have nothing against Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or USC or Washington or Oregon or even UCLA. We have nothing against that. But when you're talking about travel, when you're talking about, you know, most of the fan base doesn't live within, you know, a two-hour time block of Tallahassee and all the places that, you know, they would be able to, or they would have to travel in the Big Ten. I mean, you have to think about that. Athletics pays the bills. Yeah. Let's just remind everybody of this. Athletic pays the bills of every part of the university's athletic program. Football does. Athletic pays it. Football pays the athletics, right?
Yeah.
And so when you have these, when you have the opportunity of the Big Ten as an overall opportunity, yes, it's great for research. It's great for academics. It's great. It's even a good football conference.
You can't deny.
It's a good football conference. It's a good basketball conference. But when you talk about regionality, when you talk about natural baked in rivalries, when you talk about the ability, I mean, Jesse, you gave this incredible picture of what the travel would look like if we versus Big Ten versus the SEC. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, we would want to, most Florida State fans, if they remove the bias, and I'll get to that in just a second, they remove the bias about ESPN and the SEC being attached. You can't tell me you don't want to go to a game day at the Grove. You can't tell me you don't want to go to Knoxville with 100,000 plus people. Yep. You can't tell me you don't want to go to Bryant-Denny Stadium. You don't want to go to Walmart Football Stadium. I don't know what. Oh, it's Arkansas, wherever they play at.
Yeah.
You can't tell me you don't want to go to DK Memorial in Texas. You can't tell me you want to go to Oklahoma. You can't tell me that you don't want to go watch those crazy lunatics at Texas A&M. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, every, almost every fan base, every stadium in the SEC outside of Vandy has an incredible atmosphere. It's drivable. It's easy to reach. And yes, while the top five fan bases, or I'm going to say four, while the top four fan bases in the Big Ten might travel very well. I saw one of those comments. Oh, well, Penn State, Michigan, all they travel. Great. Yeah. Is USC traveling? Is Washington traveling? Yeah. Is Oregon traveling? That's across the country. You might get a couple hundred. You're not going to get a couple thousand like you would in the SEC.
And one thing that I will say, because before I forget, that you reminded me of a comment that someone said, well, you know, we have fans all over the country, and it would put them, and I get that. And I know that there are fans nationwide for Florida State. Mm-hmm. I understand that. There's a lot of Big Ten retirees in the state of Florida. That's where they come to retire. So they could come to some home games. And I understand what that person was trying to say when they said that. But my thing is, we know it's predominantly in the Southeast. We know it's predominantly in the state of Florida. So I think it's, you will open the door massively to about probably 25 to 30% of your fan base. You're also going to be shutting the door on the 70% of your fan base that lives in the Southeast and already has to drive multiple hours to get to Tallahassee, because again, Tallahassee's kind of, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. So it's hard to get to. And there was another comment that kind of laughed when we were talking about drive time. They're like, who drives nowadays? You know, everybody flies. And I'm like, have you seen all the stuff falling off planes?
Exactly. Who's getting on a plane right now?
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, I mean, there's arguments to both sides. And I think that, also, I want to give credit to some of the other Big Ten fan bases like Nebraska and all that stuff, that they do pack out their stadiums.
Oh, they do. They do.
But again, I think, like we said, when you get to that middle to lower tier brand of football in the Big Ten, it's just not the same.
It's just not the same. And here's the thing. I'll tell you this, Jesse, and we've talked about this before. We even talked about it in the last episode. I lived in California for almost 6 years. And if I was still in California, would I have loved for Florida State to be able to come to USC, come to UCLA, go out to Oregon and Washington? For sure. I'll be selfish, right? But if you told me they had an option to go to the Big Ten or the SEC, even with me living in California, I would have chose the SEC, because I like the rivalries. I like the pageantry. Yeah. I like all of that I just don't think the Big Ten, outside of their top-tier brands, has. Nebraska is a top-tier brand of the Big Ten. Maybe not product on the field, but man, I've been in Nebraska. I've been to that stadium, to Memorial Stadium. I've seen a game there. They sell it out. They have like one of the longest sellout streaks in the country right now, over years.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But when you get to Rutgers, when you get to Illinois, when you get to Michigan State, when they're terrible, like, I mean, you're just like, what? No, this isn't compared to an Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Texas A&M or
Auburn or something.
I mean, it just doesn't compare. And then the other thing I'll say this is, like you said, Jesse, listen, your boy's here. Listen, we can't stand ESPN. We can't stand that Fournette network. We can't stand it. Makes us go crazy. But we recognize, as we're hoping you guys would if we end up in the SEC, is that, like Jesse said, the SEC did not screw us. Greg Sankey, you know, Darth Vader himself, he was on ESPN campaigning for his teams to get in. That's what he's supposed to do.
Right.
Where you should direct your anger is Jim Phillips, who was over in the back getting screwed by the Big Ten and the SEC over and over again. That's who you should direct your anger to. Yeah. And ESPN too. Those two, and for sure. And old Boo.
Let's throw Boo in there. We can't, can't let old Boo off the hook.
No. And old Boo. That's right. Who your anger should go to. Not the SEC. I know. It's the SEC. Who? You know what? They're not the ones to blame.
By the way, Boo, if you're watching this, and I know you're not, but maybe you decided to tune in on this fine Friday morning. How's your Cinderella team doing that didn't deserve a chance?
My gosh, what a point.
Did you see him like crying when they made like the Elite Eight or Final Four? Yes. Like, man, you need, like, that's just the but irony
Boo,
of that.
Boo,
like,
I thought you said that just wasn't good enough. They didn't have the right kind of players. Like,
exactly. So how ironic is that? And the last thing I will say to this, because we'll move on to another topic, but the last thing I will say is, as much as people hate the SEC and they say they don't want to go to it because of what all happened, when we took that poll, it was around 2,050 votes. 67% voted for the Big Ten. A lot of the comments were because they didn't want to be in the SEC because of what happened. Mm. Man, here's the truth. If you took that poll a week before the snub, I guarantee you it would have been 67% the SEC.
Ooh.
I just do. Like, I just do.
Yep.
Because people loved the idea of going to play all these big teams. You know, look at, we got Alabama on the schedule coming up. We got Georgia on the schedule coming up. And everybody's excited about these big matchups.
That's right.
Everybody was cool with that until the CFP snub happened. And I just want to say that it wasn't the SEC that left you out.
That's right.
Like, I wouldn't hold that against them. You kind of want that golden child treatment.
That's right. That's
if
right.
Nothing else. So, but that's pretty much just some things we wanted to touch up on the last episode. So with that being said, we'll kind of jump into the next topic. But before we do, Michael, you know, it doesn't matter what conference you're in. You're going to get a great deal at Alumni Hall when you use code SPEAR to get 10% off all the gear you want. You know, springtime coming up. You probably want some new FSU t-shirts. And Alumni Hall has a great deal that you can stock up and save with 2 for $38 tees. They have them for baseball, basketball, football, all kinds of stuff. So go check them out and take additional 10% off with code SPEAR. So thank you for supporting those that support us. That's Alumni Hall FSU, 1415 Timberlade Road in Tallahassee, and then online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. So, Michael, let's get into this game that I was talking about,
keeping it
football related here. So this is going to be a game that, let's be honest, I came up with this on my way home from work at 8 o'clock this morning. I hadn't been asleep in quite a while because I work night shift, for those of you that don't know. So I just came up with this on the way home. So when you talk about Florida State in 2024, you're looking at, we believe, if things go right, if things hit the way you think they should, Florida State could very well go 12-0.
Yep.
You know, I think we both predicted most likely 11-1, which I want to say something about that in a second. Did you see Riley Leonard is out right now? Getting injured. Like, he got injured. He has to get some kind of surgery at Notre Dame.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Now, I didn't see that he is not, like, I don't think he's out for the season, but I'm not sure when he's going to be back. Now,
oh man.
The good news is we have an announcement coming up next week as well.
Yes,
we've hinted at it. If you guys follow us on social media, you probably already know what we're talking about. A little bit of partnership that's going to give us access to a lot of different things. And so there are some resources we can reach out to in that. So we'll find some more details out on that as things progress. There is a Notre Dame representative in there too. So we can get some inside information there as well. So we will leverage that partnership for you guys going forward. I just saw that and I was like, that, you know, that could change
that's
things.
Yeah, that's good.
Season ending injury. So anyway, back to what we were saying, Florida State, we feel like could go 12-0 to 11-1. That's probably their most likely record. If things don't pan out, because a lot of this, like we've talked about before, we love the talent on this team. We love the potential of this team. But there's a lot of unproven. There's a lot of question marks as to whether guys will produce to the level that we think they will. So realistically, I think Florida State's floor could be 9-3, maybe even 8-4 if you just get upset. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it does happen.
It happens. Yep.
Right. Like, you have to figure Miami, I hate to say it, but like they have all the talent. They just don't never know how to use it. So like they have the talent. They and you have to go to their place. And then of course, you have Notre Dame on the road. You have Clemson, who's, again, I know you get them at home, but technically that roster is still very talented.
That's tricky game at SMU.
Right. But that's three toss-ups right there. So if you factor in maybe even one upset. Now, I think Florida's a tough out, but you might be seeing DJ Lagway with an interim coach by the time you get to that game if they lost a lot. So we see where they could go 9-3, 8-4 if things go poorly. And so what we're going to do is this is the spring edition. We'll revisit this later on, but this is wants versus needs. What do we feel like? What is the dividing line between 12-0 and 9-3? What do we want to happen that we feel like would push us over?
Okay.
And what do we feel like needs to happen for us to get to that level?
Gotcha.
And so the first one I want to throw out here is because obviously you start with the quarterback, the most, important position on the field in the game. And that is for DJU to throw for 3,000 yards or at least have 3,500 all-purpose yards and at least 30 touchdowns all-purpose. Now, the reason I say this, and we'll go for want or need, I was on the fence on this one because you have to understand when we talk about this, there's a lot of moving parts. Like if Florida State runs for 250 yards a game, no, he doesn't need to throw for 3,000 yards. It's just it is what it is. But realistically speaking, I put this originally as a want, and then I literally have out next to it want-ish. Because I feel like this might be a need. And so I'll throw it to you, but let me make a little case on this first. So here's why I think this is an interesting topic to begin with. So keep in mind, DJU has not thrown for over 3,000 yards in his career yet. And so all purpose, last year he had 2,857 yards, did not play in a bowl game. That's just a regular season. In 2022 at Clemson, he had 3,066 yards, 29 total touchdowns. Now, they made the ACC championship that year. So that obviously shows you if you can hit that mark, that's going to put you. Now, their defense had a lot to do with that, but you're hoping Florida State's defense will be good again next year. Now, you look at Jordan Travis. In 2023, he had 2,932 all purpose yards, 2,756 through the air. Of course, you have to remember he only played in 10 games. I don't count the North Alabama. That was only a quarter and a half.
Right.
So, again, like I've explained to you guys before, where I projected things using season average because you felt like he would have been able to throw pretty good against, Florida's defense wasn't that good and neither was North Alabama. So, if he'd have gotten to finish both of those games, he using his season averages, he would have had about 3,474 roughly yards throughout the season. And that is in the regular season. That's not the ACC championship. So again, he eclipses he would have eclipsed the 3,000-yard passing mark at around 3,282. And then he would have really pushed up against that 3,500 all-purpose yards. And you see where that got Florida State. So then in 2022, Jordan Travis threw for 3,214 yards, 3,631 all-purpose, and 31 touchdowns. Again, that turned Florida State into for all intents and purposes, their offense was better in 22 than it was in 23.
Yep.
And so that got Florida State to 10-3, whereas, maybe they have a couple of things, they can get friggin' 3 points in the NC State game, and then maybe if you didn't lose Fabian Lovett, which we're going to talk about that topic a little bit later, maybe you beat Wake Forest and you go 11-1. So, just keep that in mind. And it's funny because last year or before 2022, there was a college football account that tweeted something out and it said, if you had to pick one player to ball out on your team this season, who is it and what is their stat line? And I would love to see, this was in May before the season started, I said, I would love to see Jordan Travis have at least 3,500 all-purpose yards and 35 total touchdowns, which meant he probably didn't miss any time with injury. That year, remember, 3,500 and 35. He had 3,631 yards and 31 touchdowns. So we were pretty spot on there. And even to go back one further, in 2019, Memphis went 12-1 under Mike Norvell. They went 12-2 overall, but he wasn't there for the Cotton Bowl. Brady White had 3,307 passing yards in the regular season. That's not counting the conference championship or the bowl game and 32 touchdowns. So that's a really long way of saying when you look back at Mike Norvell's history, his best teams threw for over 3,000 yards in the regular season and around that 30 touchdown mark. So again, can DJ do that as a guy who has not thrown for over 3,000 yards in his career? And the last thing I'll say before I kick it to you is throughout Mike Norvell's career, if he's had one consistent starter through the entire season, from the time he was at Arizona State to Memphis to Florida State, there was only one time that they did not hit 3,000 yards as a quarterback, and that was 2020 when they only played 9 games. The only other two times it happened, they used split quarterbacks because of injuries. So again, man, I initially said want, but I'm thinking that 3,000 yards and 30 touchdowns might be a need.
Yeah, I could see it definitely being a need, and here's why. Because if you can get DJ to get at least 3,000 all-purpose yards, you mentioned earlier, like if they're running for 250 yards a game, you don't need him throwing for or getting that number. Well, you do, because here's why. Of those 250 yards, there's likely about 60 to 100 of those yards are going to come from the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So if they're running him and they're using that run game, you know, Mike Norvell likes to use that run game, that quarterback one game to keep the defense honest, keep those linebackers kind of sucked up. So when they want to go over top, because you know they're going to go over top, so, and he's going to leverage that as well. So he's going to use that quarterback run game to try to soften up that those linebacker play, and then of course jab, jab, jab with the running backs, jab, jab, jab with the quarterback. Boom, over the top. Now you got these speeders on the outside. So you are going to need DJ to go for at least 3,000 plus yards all purpose, whether that's throwing and passing. You're going to need him to hit that 30 touchdown all purpose running and passing as well, because then I think you see the full gambit of a Mike Norvell offense. The whole purpose of going out and getting DJ is that now you get to expand the offense to, whereas now you're taking more deep shots. You know, last year we kind of talked about this in the pre-show. You were taking deep shots with a quarterback that, while, you know, he had drastically improved his throwing motion, still probably wasn't your best deep shot thrower. Right. And now you have literally one of the best deep throwers in the country. And so you're going to want to take advantage of that over top, which means you're going to have to leverage the underneath running game from both the running backs and the quarterbacks. So to me, that's not a want. That's a need. You're going to need him to go 3,000 plus all-purpose yards so that you see the full gambit of a Mike Norvell offense.
Right. I agree. And when you look at last year, he did put up 27 total touchdowns. And in 2022 at Clemson, he put up 29. So he's been close. I just think he needs to take that next step to be able to hit that. And you know, it's funny because, like we talked about, man, I think if you had almost, I'd have felt really good if you'd have almost flip-flopped the receiving core from last year to this year. Because, like, if you'd have paired the deep ball go-getters with DJU, I think that would have been a recipe for success. Whereas I think Jordan would have done better with this year's receiving core, where you have more kind of spread them out, hit the underneath, work all the entire field and stuff like that. I think maybe that was would have been a better combination, but, you know, it's water under the bridge. But yeah, right. I think, and 3,000 yards through the air is not a high bar to set.
No.
I mean, when you look at what Brady White did that last year at Memphis in 2019, I mean, now this is counting a conference championship and a bowl game. He threw for over 4,000 yards.
That's right.
So, you know, when you look at Jordan Travis with the bowl game and all that, it was 3,600 yards. I mean, they racked it up. So, yes, I do think you need to see him throw for 3,000 yards through the air. And like I said, he has not done that yet in his career. But I think that Mike Norvell, I mean, pretty much if you're a Mike, there's like death taxes and Mike Norvell quarterbacks throwing for over 3,000 yards. So that's why I think they can unlock that ability. And that's one reason why I think he will hit that number. And I think the important thing to remember too, is this is not talking about, okay, we're trying to go 9-3, 10-2, something like that. This is what needs to happen if you're trying to go 12-0, 11-1.
That's right.
And so, yeah, I think you need to see that 3,000 through the air. And I would like to see the close to 3,500 all purpose, because, you know, he's also brings that run threat.
That's right.
So now, staying on the offense, let's talk about who he's going to throw to. Now, this is another one where I think this is going to be a need. I think you need either, I don't think you have to have both, although both would be a luxury.
Okay.
I think you need either Hakeem Williams or Kentron Portier to take that step into being that wide receiver two level starter, not just like, you know, where we've seen in the past where Portier put up like 280 yards or something like that, where it was like, yeah, I mean, he made an impact, but he wasn't like a, you know, a Keon and Johnny type of situation. Yeah. We feel good about Malik Benson. We feel everybody feels like he's going to be an electric player. It's still not guaranteed. We don't know that. I mean, he didn't produce a ton at Alabama. We've talked about ad nauseum about the reasons why quarterback play wasn't that great. Kind of in a stacked receiver room with two really good guys there with Burton and Bond. But I think you feel good about him, but you need that number too. And the funny thing about this one is, I mean, we got like 35 receivers on this roster.
Right.
But right. But getting to some of the news from spring, Destin Hill is now out indefinitely with an injury. And we don't know, you know, Florida State doesn't release news injury. So we don't know how long that's going to last. So that could hurt your depth.
Right.
Jarrell Powers at tight end is another guy that's out for the rest of spring. That's so you're kind of thinning that out a little bit. Now we're hoping Destin Hill can be back by the season because from what we understand, he was having a really, really, really good spring. Yeah. And so you hope he comes back. But again, you talk about Darian Williamson. That's a guy that has flashed basically every time he gets on the field. It's just about once a season in 4 years because he can't stay healthy.
That's
you know, you talked about this too with Deuce Spann. He's got all the talent in the world. You still don't know that you can feed him more than three or four times a game because he just he's still learning that position.
Still learning,
right, and so I think when you start to look at guys you want to rely on, of course you have Jaylen Brown. He has 12 snaps in college. He's not proven. Now, he looks good and looks like he's going to contribute sooner than later, maybe sooner than we expected. I think he went from like a 25, 26 piece to now he's going to work in 24. But, man, I think it would be so big for this offense to get one or both. Both would be great. But if you could get one of those two, and I will say, while I do think this is a need, I think both of them bring different individual skill sets. Now, we've seen Portier have another big spring.
That's right.
Same thing that happened last year. He was basically the king of the spring.
That's right.
Making some ridiculous catches that have been released in highlights by Florida State. I think Hakeem Williams also is that high ceiling guy, that five star. He's good at blocking. So, yeah, man, I think for Florida State to be that team that you want them to be, I don't think you can just kind of be like a one trick pony with Malik Benson on the outside. Now, you got a couple of slot guys if Destin Hill comes back, but you know, we were talking about earlier, you're a little thin there too with just Ja'Kai, who's as far as proven, there's young guys that we don't know. And of course, they can step up at any moment. Freshmen, sophomores have breakout seasons.
That's right.
Man, I think you need one of those two to take that next step. Maybe not a Keon Coleman type of season, but I'm thinking you need at least your second wide receiver to be somewhere in that 500 yard range.
Yeah, listen, I'm thinking about a game last season where our top two wide receivers were out, some other players were injured, and it was Jordan Travis's best game.
Yeah.
Right? But it was basically the Jordan Travis, Ja'Kai Douglas game was basically what happened, right?
Yeah.
And while Mike Norvell and that whole offense, they figured it out. They figured out how to win that game. You cannot have that happen again. You cannot go into a game where when your two best wide receiver options are out, you're basically now hand strapped. You got one hand tied behind your back. And so I think this is a need to go 12-0. You need, and I'm going to put it this way for you, Jesse, you need both Hakeem Williams and Portier to be good.
Yeah.
You also need one of them to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. They both need to be good, but you need one of them to step out and be the clear number two, you know, potentially alongside, you know, a Malik Benson or something like that. Right. Yeah. You need one of them to be great. You need both of them to be good. Listen, this is this Portier's last year here?
I'd have to look it up.
Potentially.
It's either this one or next one. Yeah.
It's time.
It's time. Yeah.
Regardless of what it is, it's time. It's time for this dude to step up. Now, you know, Jesse, he's one of my breakout players for the year that I've picked, him and Hakeem. So this is a perfect game for that. We need, it's time for Portier to put a whole season together. You know, I know injury, you can't control injury.
Right.
But if he can put a whole season together, stay away from the injury bug, he can be a good receiver. Now, I argue that Hakeem is the one you want to become great. Not that Portier can't be great, but Hakeem is the one you want to see take that really big step because he's the best of the two in blocking. He has the better, bigger, more NFL-ready body of the two. He is the five-star receiver, and you're trying to show other receivers that, hey, you can come in this offense and within a year or so, you can be a playmaker. You can be dynamic. Look at the way your body changes. I mean, I still think back to the day of if Hakeem could have played a lot more, what that would have said for Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State.
I think about that. I was just about to say, I mean, as long as you have Brian Hartline at Ohio State, you got to put something on film because, I mean, they are just recruiting the heck out of receivers.
They're just getting the best of them. And so this is why I think I would argue that you need both of them. You need. So between want and need, this is a need. You're going to go 12-0. You need both of them to be great or good, but you need Hakeem to be great. You need Hakeem to get 500-plus yards, at least 5 to 8 touchdowns. Some breakaway stuff, probably in that 50 range of catches per season. The drops need to come down. I know that's been I know we'll talk about spring at some time, but that's been a bugaboo of the spring right now is the wide receivers are dropping stuff. So, like the consistency of that, you need Portier to be good. You need Hakeem to be great.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would like to see one at least be that high level starter.
Yeah.
You know, because I think when you look back, if you could even have, and that doesn't mean that Malik Benson is going to be wide receiver number one. It doesn't mean it. It's just right now we feel like he's the most ready to be wide receiver number one. But even if you can get like an Ontario Wilson, a Pokey Wilson type of season out of him as your speedy guy, it would be nice to have that big body box them out type of receiver on the other side, like you had with Johnny Wilson.
Yep.
Because again, that also shades coverage. You know, how many times did you see where they were doubling up Johnny Wilson, which allowed
Keon.
You know, Pokey
or
Keon to have a good game because you distracted them. So you don't want that just one dominant guy. You need one of those to step up.
That's right.
So now let's switch over to defense real quick, because we're getting a lot of needs here. Feels like we're being a little needy. So the first one I have here, this is a two-parter, and I'm still going to be a little needy on this one, but would you take a defensive tackle in the portal? I have this down as a want. I don't think you have to have one. I think you want one. That's me personally. Now, what I say about the two-part of that, the follow-up to that, is I think you now would – you would answer that with a need, and that is you need these defensive tackles to stay healthy.
Yes, you do.
Or else, and you can't plan for injury. I mean, you can prepare for it, but you can't plan for it. That leads me to almost put the defensive tackle into a need, but I'm just going to say a want because I don't know the whole roster. I'm not Odell Higgins. I can't speak on what the depth players that we haven't seen are, but the point that I made with this was, when you think back to, like, let's first look at 24. Your D tackles, you're starting two, potentially about 3 to 4. You feel pretty good about. Daryl Jackson and Josh Farmer are going to be dogs. You feel pretty good about what you're going to get out of Grady Kelly. And you feel like Daniel Lyons is a guy. But KJ Sampson is still young. I mean, you have to remember, not only did you lose your top-end guys like Fisk and Fabo and all that, you also lost a couple of other guys. Like a Malcolm Ray, some of the depth that bolted for the door. So you still need, and Dennis Briggs and guys like that. So you still need a little depth there. Now, I think what's kind of funny is it's almost like we flip-flop from DN to D tackle from last year to this year, where it's like last year you felt really good about your ones at defensive end, but then it got pretty slim as the talent drop-off. You had some guys, but the talent drop-off from the ones to the twos was pretty steep. Whereas this year, you know, I think D tackles that, where you have a boatload of defensive ends.
Yep.
You feel great about it, but you're a little thin at defensive tackle now when you look at just depth down the depth chart. And the reason that's important is, like, sure, if you stay healthy, which is what I said was the need, maybe you don't need one. But at the same time, I think you have to look back at 2022 or 2021 when you lost, or no, it was 22 when you lost Fabian Lovett. That had a lot to do with your inability to stop the run up the middle. If you're trying to go 12-0 and Daryl Jackson and Josh Farmer miss any amount of time, especially a big game, I'm going to be nervous because I think that not only that, if you bump one of your twos into a one spot, now your depth is even further down the line.
Yeah.
So I don't think you necessarily need to go out and get, you know, another, it'd be nice to get another Braden Fisk, and competition breeds excellence. So I don't think you need to go out and get, you know, a guy who started at Georgia last year or something like that. But I think you need like a experienced, solid guy just to give you depth in case you get that injury up front. Now, like you were telling me before the show, they have moved Durajaye inside a little bit. They're kind of working him at defensive tackle. He's kind of like that Dennis Briggs body where like he's big enough to play defensive tackle. He's just a small defensive tackle.
Right.
But he can also play defensive end. So maybe that's a multi-purpose guy that they're cross-training to provide that depth. But, man, I'm going to say the portal is a want. But if it's only a want, you need the health to be a need. And health is always a need. Let's make that clear. You always want all your guys.
That's right.
But, you know, there's a few position groups here where if you sustained one guy, you're fine.
You're fine.
But defensive tackle does not feel like one of those positions.
No, I mean... Yeah, outside of Daryl Jackson and Josh Farmer, you basically have KJ Sampson, Grady Kelly, Daniel Lyons, and then there was one more I was looking at. Oh, I can't remember who.
And I do like Daniel Lyons. I will say that.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
But some of this is a product of you sent a few guys, you know, on their way to the league and stuff like that, and. Let's be frank, man. High school recruiting at the defensive tackle position has struggled a little bit.
That's
so, like, you just don't have that next 4- and 5-star guy to step in off the bench. So you kind of have to go get it from the portal.
So you're only 5 deep at DT, and you're playing 2 DTs. Now, depending on how they, you know, if they go 4-3-3-3-4, you know, they do that hybrid kind of line situation there.
Right.
They can miss a match, and they can figure it out. I'm going to say that this is... Is there a middle option to this want or need? Because I feel like that's where we are.
Yeah,
I feel like we're in the middle.
We can call it like the well, I don't want to call it weed because then we might get, this might not be flagged as a family friendly show if we call it a weed. But you know what I mean? Like
it's definitely know. There's definitely some middle gray area to this. It's both a want, but it's also a need because you're absolutely right. If either one of Daryl Jackson or Josh Farmer gets hurt and you have to move a Grady Kelly up or Daniel Lyons up, well, now you're at 2. That's right. It. Your rotational body's at 2 deep. That's all you got. And so now you have this issue of where, man, obviously you're going to lose the production. The skill level goes down. The excellence goes down. All those things because that's why they're not starting. Even though they rotate all the defensive tackles and they have a rotation with that, that's going to hurt. So you're 5 deep, so you don't necessarily need another DT. But, man, if one goes down, wouldn't it be great to know that you have another two on the depth chart, number two level player ready to go that can at least hold you and sustain you until hopefully that injury comes back or – God forbid it's a catastrophic injury and it's out for the whole season. Wouldn't it be nice to know that you at least have a plug and play defensive tackle ready to go? That's just, that's just been a rotational piece. That's not going to hurt your depth. Like I feel like in today's era of college football, it's always been, but even more so now, your lines are the most important things on your team. So your offensive line and your defensive line. And to make sure that you have a backup plan for your backup plan for your backup plan, right? Yeah. You do not want to go into the season, have one of your stars get injured, then moving one of your twos up, and now your threes and fours are like, oh, what are we going to do here? You might want to have the double of the twos sitting there ready to go. I just think you don't want to – this is where I'm like, man, it feels like a need, but it also feels like a want.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing too is, again, keep in mind that we're talking about from the eyes of trying to go 12-0. And when you look at the teams that have been dominant in the past, the recent national championship winners and stuff like that, they win with depth in the trenches.
That's right. That's right.
Clemson is like, they might be here or there with their skill players sometimes. They are loaded on the defensive line. Georgia, Alabama, even Michigan. These are teams that are loaded on the defensive line. They can come at you in waves. So I think that, I will say I understand that it is a little hard to hold that depth nowadays.
I get it.
With the portal, you might not have guys that want to stick around to be like that. But I just feel like you don't want to try and make a national title run where if you lose like one defensive tackle, it could derail your whole plans.
Yep.
And that also goes for nursing a nagging injury. Like Josh Farmer is out for the spring. They said it looks very positive that he'll be back for the season, and it's not anything major. but that can linger. You know, what if you re-aggravate that and maybe you just want to give them a game or two off because it's, you know, it's whatever week and you don't feel like you need them or something like that. So, yeah, man, I think this one is this one's a bit of a weed. It's kind of it's kind of in the middle, you know, it really is. So with that one, we'll move on. Another offensive topic that I want to go on is, does the run game need to be more productive than they were in 2023? And I'm going to put this as a need. I think it is. So looking back at the numbers, in 2022, Florida State just, I mean, they ran all over everybody. Man, they averaged 214 yards a game. I don't expect them to do that again. I don't. It'd be great if they could. I think they can. I just don't. That's an insanely high number. 33 touchdowns on the ground. In 2023, that number dropped. Now, the touchdowns only fell down 1 to 32. Gotcha. But the yards per game dropped down to 150. That's 64 yards a game dropped off from 2022. Now, this is a kind of a, this is an onion question. You got to peel it layer by layer. Right. Was there a little bit of stuff with the backs with, you know, and I know you'll touch on this as well with Trey Benson, that was a bit of a boom or bust back. Was it on a little bit of the offensive lineman? Yeah, I think so too. Did you have a mobile quarterback who was one of the most legitimate run threats in college football that never ran the ball until late in the season because of injury? And when he did, he got injured. So, like, I think there, this is a multifaceted question, but I do think it does need to get a little bit better because for you to be the team that you want to be, you running the ball successfully takes that pressure off DJ.
Yes. Yeah.
Because as good as we feel about DJ at quarterback, there's still no guarantee that he's just going to find it. You know what I mean? Like, yes, we think on Norvell and them in this offense can use him to his best ability and all that. You may get another typical season around 3,000 all-purpose yards or something like that, where that's kind of a ceiling. We just don't know. And so I think if you have that running game that can take the pressure off of DJ so he maybe doesn't have to win games until he proves that he can, I think that's going to be very beneficial. And we know Mike Norvell really likes to run the ball in this offense as well. And I'll kick it back to you on a couple of things. So in 2023, this is going to be a two-parter. The minimum rushing that a CFP team had that was not named Washington was 169 yards a game. So about 20 yards more per game than you ran for in 2023. Now, Washington's rush offense was pretty freaking terrible. They were 106 in the country at 118 yards a game. So can you make it to the playoffs and make it to the national championship without running for 170, 100, 200 yards a game? Of course you can. They also had Michael Penix in the number two pass offense in the country. So unless you think DJU is about to have a Michael Penix type of season, you need the run game. And then in 2022, just because I looked up one extra year, the minimum run game yards per game by a team in the playoffs was 192 yards a game. Oof. So again, like I think if you can, you know, obviously if you're an air raid team, you can throw the ball 400 yards a game. You don't have to run it like that. But I think to be able to lean on that run game, to be able to have that successful run game and that defense that we're hoping Florida State can have, would do worlds for this offense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, just look at that. I don't anticipate that Mike Norvell wants to turn DJU into Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. Right. I don't know if he even has that capability. I would imagine that if you look at the history of Mike Norvell led offenses, the run game has factored in significantly. I mean, go back to his days at Arizona State, go back to Memphis. I mean, early Florida State, that was, I mean, you remember 2020, 2021, all we had was the run game.
Yeah. I think 2020, we averaged 199 yards a game.
Yeah. We were running all over people because that's all we could do.
Exactly.
We could throw the ball.
We were a triple option team.
We were basically, I just watched a replay the other day of Jordan Travis. I think Florida State was like 3-6 at the time. And Jordan Travis busted out this read option on Pitt and just took it all the way home. Or maybe it was some like low level team. I can't remember what the team was, but it just made me think, man, we used to run all over people and just not even apologize for it. And last year, I thought we got away from that. Now, I think there were several reasons for that. Okay. Right. I think there were several reasons why we did that. I think with Trey Benson, you had a boomer bust type of running back who, it seemed like in 23, he was like a straight down, north or south, get the hole, get out. And you had Trayshawn Ward. You had all of that. That was, I mean, it was just incredible to see how they were able to do that. It seemed like this past season, he started to try to dance more in the hole, in the pocket there, yeah, as they call it. Tried to make guys miss in a phone booth, all those things. And that's just not his game consistently.
Right.
When you saw him go north and south, you saw him break out big runs. When you saw him try to dance in the pocket, you saw them get tackled behind the line of scrimmage a lot of times. Now, why was he dancing? Well, you could probably also pin that a little bit to the offensive line. I mean, the shuffling all season long. I mean, gosh, I don't think they had a consistent lineup all season long last year. Not that I remember, and I could be wrong, so in the comments, let us know. But I don't think they had a consistent lineup all season long. They were shuffling in and out of players. Some players were playing out of position. Some players just were not good at the guard spot when you're using the GT pool counter, which is Mike Norvell's bread and butter run play with Alex Atkins there. And so them not playing as well forced the running backs to kind of have to dance in the pocket a little bit. But you saw Trey do it a lot more than normally he would have. So you have some of that. I would also say, too, and you may not agree with me, Jesse, is that I thought some of the play calling at some times just seemed a little bit. And Mike Norvell is very aggressive, and it's one of the things I love about him. But there were just moments where it was like, this is a clear run down. Like, run the ball here. And we're chucking it up 50 yards down the field for incompletion. Yeah. And so I think also that kind of played into the effect as well, too. And that's possibly because Mike Norvell knew what he had in the offensive line and what was going on with the running back. So I do – I'm not – please don't – if you're watching this, Mike Norvell, please don't hear us saying that I think you did a terrible thing. I'm just saying that I think your play calling – I think the play calling also factored into why the run game went down a little bit.
Right. And I will say that I think the run game has the potential to be much better this year. I think that's a sum of all parts. That's not on any one person. I think that with the added depth of the offensive line, I think the TJ Ferguson and the Richie Leonard from Florida, I think are going to give you kind of those bigger, more athletic guards that should be able to hit those pull assignments. And then I also you have a little more variety in the backfield. You now have Toa Philly who's, you know, got more experience. You have Keziah Holmes, who can be factored in, who we saw make a couple flashes late in the season. I think that Cam Davis, from what we've seen in spring, you are not going to be able to keep him off the field, even
that boy
as a freshman.
Is a tank.
Man, he's going to be really good. Like, he's going to be one of the next great ones. And then, obviously, Sam Singleton is a guy that kind of gets lost in translation that flashes a lot. And then I think you also have Jalen Lucas in there. And you know, that's a gadget back that's going to be able to give you that really kind of quick, shifty guy, can do things out of the backfield. And then, of course, Roydell Williams gives you a little bit of power, too. So I just think all those things combined, as well as having DJU, who's that guy that did run it over 100 times at Clemson, that's kind of built for that can show you those things. Like, I know people talk about him being like 240 or 255 or something like that. But, man, I've watched a couple clips from him at Clemson. And there was one that I saw floating around social media the other day where I forget the team they were playing, but basically he's standing in the pocket and there's literally a dude like holding his leg, you know, like got it in a bear hug, and DJ just stands there and flicks it in for a touchdown. And it's like, man, that's just, he's got the power. So like, you want to see him use that size and that strength. So I think they can be better. And so but I think you're going to need that because, you know, if DJ comes out of nowhere and just has some breakout season and Mike Norvell just unlocks something, I think you're going to want to have that run game there. It's kind of that security blanket.
That's right.
But of course, I'd love to see DJ break out, you know, and all of this could be for nothing. You know, it seems like every time I say they need to do something, you know, I'm going to be like, we need to throw for 3,000. And next thing you know, Mike Norvell's running the triple option. So
that's right.
We could be completely wrong, but that's what I think are some of the needs. And of course, this, like I said, I came up with this like 2 hours before we record. So maybe we'll do a little more, we'll do an updated version of this closer to the season when we kind of know a little bit more about the position groups and the roster. But in the meantime, if you're watching this on YouTube, drop in the comments, what is your number one want for this offseason yet remaining? And then what is one thing you think needs to happen for Florida State next year? So drop that in the comments. Let us know what you think if you're watching on YouTube. And so with that, Michael, we will transition to kind of wrap things up here as we get close to an hour. Let's talk a little bit. Just give me a few minutes and we'll talk a little bit about baseball and basketball and then we'll wrap this up. So basketball, man, let's get the bad news out of the way first. Do we even have a basketball team anymore? I'm really not sure. I'm not sure. It sounds like, from all intents and purposes, that they're going to give Leonard Hamilton kind of that victory lap year, that one last year to go out. And I understand that. It's the last year on his contract. You really don't benefit at all from moving on early and having to pay a buyout and things like that. You got facility upgrades you're doing. You're trying to get all this stuff going. You're in the middle of a lawsuit. It's just smarter for the school to hang on to him for this year. The problem is, as of right now, as of when we're recording this on April the 5th, Florida State has already lost 9 players so far between either attrition or the portal. Now, you still have Jameer Watkins coming back, who was your best player this year. Do you think he's coming back? He hasn't decided yet. That could change. Jalen Worley is also a talented player. Chandler Jackson and Taylor Bobowen, who are coming back as well. So you have a little core to build around. You just landed 4-star point guard Daquan Davis and a couple of high school guys. So there's some pieces there. But, man, if I really would love to see him go out on top because of the obviously, you know, got robbed in that COVID season and things like that. But, man, you're going to have to overhaul this roster big time. I mean, you lost a lot of really some of your most talented guys, Primo Spears and you know, a lot of these guys that hit the portal. And, Florida State's a football school, man. I don't know how much they're going to invest into this last year. But, yeah, man, I just wanted to touch on basketball because it's like the bleeding has not stopped yet.
Yeah, I just think in this era of college basketball – with the transfer portal and just everything that's kind of happening, you know, for a coach to be in his last contract year, it's just a dire straits in any facet, because recruits know he's not coming back next year. At least I'd imagine they know that. Right. You know, the coaches know he's not coming back next year. The administration knows he's not coming back next year.
He could.
You're right. He could have a great season and they're like, let's run it back. All right, let's do it again. But right now, he has no contract extension. He has 1 year left. And it's time. Everybody recognizes that. I would imagine he probably recognizes that.
Right.
But also in this era of college basketball, what makes this not such a dire strait is that he could literally go into the portal and find, you know, 5 or 6 serviceable G5 players who could help him come in this year. They got 1 year left, whatever it may be. Come play. You're going to play for a Hall of Famer. You're going to play at a program that, while yes, it's a football school, it's had some recent success.
Right.
And this is your farewell tour. This is like, I'm going to go off on top. Now, wouldn't it be like Ham at a supposedly failware tour to then like go win like, you know, 25 games, you know, win the ACC tournament championship, get to the Elite Eight, and we're like, oh, another year. And he's like, peace, you know?
Right, I know.
Like, that could be that. That's the beauty. That's the thing that, even though, you know, us pure at heart college basketball fans who missed the old days of players staying 4 or 5 years, in this era of college basketball, you could literally turn the team over instantly.
Yep.
Overnight. And so I think he will, my assumption is he will go out and find some players. Maybe they were on the fringe. They didn't get a lot of playing time elsewhere, but they're good enough. They're defensive enough. They're long enough. They have some offensive ability. I think he'll bring it all in. You'll see a typical defense grinded team in his last season, and he's going to ride with that. And I think I think the administration was smart in saying, look, we have too many frying pans right now. Is that the saying? Yeah, we have
too many irons in the fire.
There it is. Too many irons in the fire for us to make this, because this is going to require a big shift. The payout, the landing of new coaches, the payout of the assistants, the landing new assistants, a whole thing. And so they were smart to say, let's just finish out this contract. We'll see where we're at the end of the year.
Right. Because by the time you hit 2025, there's going to be a lot of things known. I mean, Doak will be done. The lawsuit could very well be done.
Hopefully.
And then I think the other thing too, with the portal not having really any kind of rules at the moment anyway, you could even sell to players. Now, this maybe not be what you want, because you, like you said, you want them to hang around. But you could even be like, hey, man, if you come here and you like it and we get a coach that you want, stay. But if not, just come put yourself
on again.
Like, come play in the ACC for a year. You know, like you said, if you're a G5 guy or maybe from a lesser conference or something like that, you can come play in the ACC for a year, get some exposure, go somewhere else next year. You know, you can at least do that. But I hope that they can put together something for him to at least have a decent run and not 17-16 like they were this year. Right. You know, that would be something that you'd like to see. At least make it to the tournament one last time. You know, kind of like how Mike Martin went out, when in his final season. Maybe they just had that miracle run. Maybe they make an NC State type of run or something.
That'd be nice.
You know, I mean, we smacked NC State in the regular season. And then, you know, here we are. But lastly, I want to touch on baseball real quick. So far, you know, still hanging in there, still doing very well, 24-4 on the season. They got a series against Boston College coming up this weekend. Should be very winnable for them. I think, you know, this is a potential sweep candidate, but they should at least get the series win. And, man, when you look at it, I think you just really have to be happy with their performance so far. I saw the other day that Link Jarrett won the perfect game midseason coach of the year.
Yes, he did.
You're having Florida State projected as some top seeds looking into the postseason. There's a lot of baseball left to play. You still have Wake Forest. You still have Duke on the schedule. You still have Miami. You got another game against Florida. So there's still a lot of tough tests on the schedule. But, I mean, again, you feel good about, like, the Louisville's having you already got that series win. Pitt's having a really down year. That could be another ACC series win for you as well. But, man, you just got to be happy so far. I mean, you look at – we are right about midway through the season right now. I think before this weekend series, you are right at the halfway point right now.
That's right.
And Florida State has got 24 wins. They had 23 all season last year.
That's right.
So, like, unless you go on a 30-game losing streak, which I would hope not, obviously that would be just – I don't even know how that would even happen. You feel like this team, and I was kind of doing some counting and projecting. I mean, I feel like this team legitimately can fall somewhere around 36 to 40 wins. That's a really good season that probably gets you to host a regional. And so, like, man, that's huge. And just looking at some of the numbers from last year to this year, you know, and we're looking at maybe doing a midseason review, so I won't dive too far in, but just looking at some of the things that have changed. Florida State in last year had 55 home runs the entire season. Mm. They have 53 already. So, like, it looks like, you know, the power's back in the lineup. The pitching has done so much better. They're currently holding a 3.64 ERA. Last year, they finished with a 5.75 ERA. I mean, looking at strikeouts, they had 518 last year. They're already at 348 this year, and they're only halfway through the season. So you could, I mean, almost double that. And so, like, man, I really think that this team has found themselves. I think they got it going. Probably the most exciting thing is you've seen the bullpen step up to the challenge after that kind of late game Clemson meltdown, that just terrible weekend. They rose to the challenge. And so I think, you know, once they rebounded, which was really nice. You got the Florida game coming up.
Yep.
Next week, not looking ahead from Boston College, but it's sold out.
That's right.
You had 6,000 people in Hauser for the Louisville game. So, like, man, it's you feel the momentum building. I know it's still early. You got, like we said, you got a lot of tough series coming up. But, man, I feel like Florida State has an opportunity to clinch just about every series. I mean, Duke is one that you're worried about. Like I said, Miami's still a good team. And you got Wake Forest out there. But you've already faced the best team on the schedule in Clemson.
Yep.
And, yeah, you got run ruled in the first one. I get it. Whoops. Stuff happens. Baseball's a weird sport, but you also had them on the rope in two games and you've bounced back since then. So, man, I just looking at this team, kind of looking at like a halfway point evaluation, man, you just got to be happy with the growth and the projection that they have. And like, man, if they can keep this up, they're going to make a postseason run and they might even get to Omaha. And that's really exciting to see how fast you can turn things around. Again, back to basketball, this baseball team turned around basically overnight,
a lot
of portal stuff. Right. And so the same thing can happen in any sport, but yeah, right. I'm excited with the progress so far this season at the halfway point.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm the same way. I mean, what you saw in that Clemson game where they basically had the series won. They basically won two of the three games and they had the meltdown, and then to come back against Louisville and win that series, win two out of three there. And the only reason they lost the middle game was because your starter gave up four runs, you know, four earned, whatever you want to call it there. They gave up four runs immediately, pretty quickly. And so if that doesn't happen, you sweep that series. You go into this week, you take care of business against Boston College, you get Florida at home, you get a chance to Sweep the series.
By the way, did you know we're the red bandana game this weekend in baseball?
Like, of course we are.
Do y'all not play anybody else? I mean, for goodness, I saw that and I was like, are we the only rival that you have? Like, pick someone else. Anyway,
now watch they pull out Constantino from somewhere and he starts running all over us.
Exactly.
But anyways, my whole point is this. Like, yes, Link has come in there and just done an incredible job. You know, first year was a mitigated disaster. But, you know, everyone understood, like, it's going to take a bit to clean up the program after what it had been for the last couple of seasons. So to turn this roster around, to turn this program around, to have the energy in the air, to have a sold-out Hauser Stadium, I mean, just there's just so much excitement. Now, I'm a professional baseball guy. I haven't always been huge in college baseball, and I am now watching a lot more college baseball, particularly Florida State baseball, because of how excited I am about this baseball team. So if you can get a fan like me who's always been like a fringe baseball fan for college baseball to become a deeply passionate fan, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I just love the emotions of college baseball. You know, they go at each other. They chirp and back and forth and all that. So it's exciting. Speaking of chirping, you know, softball is one of the most.
Oh, man. Are they nine straight, right?
Well, I was going to say those girls are ruthless when you watch college softball. It's a fun sport to watch. But yeah, I think they're on an 8 or 9 game win streak. Hasn't really been against too many ranked teams. So we still got to get over that hump. But I mean, again, you're just finding momentum at the right time. Like we talked about with, you know, the NC State basketball team. It's all about timing. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on baseball and a little bit of the basketball news, just kind of round out things for you guys here. But with that being said, again, they got the season or the series against Boston College coming up this weekend. So we'll be looking for them to do well up there. And then they return home against Florida for an exciting sold out game in Hauser. But yeah, we're going to wrap it up there, guys. Like I said, we have that episode to watch out for coming up next week. I know you guys are going to be excited about that, as well as an announcement of the new partnership coming up next week. So big week for us here at Plant the Spear next year. And we appreciate you guys because you guys are what fuel everything, those for you watching. So thank you for watching. Thank you for, you know, all your support, supporting the sponsors that support us. Make sure to like and subscribe if you've watched this far to stay tuned, because I'm telling you, hit that notification bell because you don't want to miss that next episode. It's going to be really fun. I can't wait. We don't have a whole lot of guests on here, but you know, when we get one, we aim high. So far, we've had Marvin Jones, and now we have a 2013, the Marvin Jones has been on here, which is still on our channel if you want to go check that out. And then we have also, now we're getting a 2013 national champion. So they're few and far between, but when we get them, they're pretty good. So just really looking forward to that this week. So you guys make sure to stay tuned for that. And I guess we'll end it right there, Michael, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. So you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, go Noles.